This is Greek tragedy. Reading aloud the sad plays that were rescued from the fire that destroyed the library of ancient Alexandria. Yes, you killed your father, married your mother, committed murder to spite your ex. You're a psychic, but no one believes you, and the future only holds bad things. You stand up to authority, but everyone dies in the end anyway. You're conquered and vanquished. You destroy all things for a flimsy ideal. You make bad decisions. You kid yourself that you're living in a democracy. Featuring John Cleeter, Brian DeWan, Stephanie Fleischman, David Garland, Andrea Klein, Bobby Previtt, Karen Schomer, and Rebecca Wolf.
Greek strike shows conflict within government over austerity. Athens. Hundreds of thousands of Greeks walked off their jobs on Thursday to protect austerity economics as officials of the leftist-led government wrangled with the country's international creditors over the terms of Greece's third bailout. At least one Athens protest turned violent. The 24-hour walkout shut down public services, forced the cancellation of flights, and disrupted public transportation across the country. Ferries remained moored in ports, hospitals were operating with reduced staff, and museums and archaeological sites were closed. An estimated 20,000 people joined three demonstrations in Athens, one organized by the country's two main labor unions, another by the Communist Party, and the third drawing students and leftists, according to a police spokesman. Though the protests were mostly peaceful, a gathering near the Parliament building in the early afternoon turned into a clash between riot police officers and roughly 100 masked youths who hurled stones and firebombs. The riot police responded with tear gas as a police helicopter circled over the city center and crowds fled the acrid smoke. A police spokesman said a few hours later that calm had been restored in the city, although several bank branches had been damaged. General strikes have been common in Greece in recent years as the country has struggled with the privations of recession, high unemployment, and the belt tightened that the country's foreign creditors have demanded. But Thursday's general strike was the first under the Syrian-led government, Syriza-led government of Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras.
Episode 1, Antigone. A little backstory. Antigone was the daughter of Oedipus, who famously, accidentally, or accidentally on purpose, if you believe Sigmund Freud, killed his father and married his mother. And then when he found out, consciously, I guess, that he did this, he, you know, put out his eyes and was driven out of the kingdom of Thebes. And I think he died. I presume he died. But he left the kingdom of Thebes to his two sons. He had two sons and two daughters, but of course, in the grand democracy of ancient Greece, women could not inherit land and rule. So it was left to the two sons, Eteocles and Polynices. And they were supposed to share the rule of the kingdom. But instead of sharing, they came up with this scheme and they said, you know, I'll rule for 1 year and then we'll switch and you'll rule for the next year. So Eteocles ruled for the first year. And then at the end of the first year, he said, no, I don't want to give it up. So then Polynices left. He left Thebes. He gathered a bunch of allies called Seven Against Thebes, and they went and attacked the city to try and take it back. And there was a huge battle, and during the battle, the two brothers actually killed each other. So now both the brothers are dead. And in comes Uncle Creon to make a power grab. And he takes over as king, and he decrees that Eteocles, the brother who wouldn't give up rule of the city, but who was, I guess, still default the ruler. She'll have the proper burial rites, and Polynices, who attacked Thebes, shall not. And Polynices will be left his body on the battlefield for the dogs to eat and the vultures to pick at. And in ancient Greece, this was absolutely the worst thing that could ever happen to you. It was a fate worse than death, and he's already dead. And Creon, Uncle Creon, has said that anyone who helps him, anyone who buries the body, will also be sentenced to death.
Sophocles' Antigone, written circa 442 BCE, translated by George Theodoridis. Act 1. The time is daybreak on the morning after the fall of the two brothers, Eteocles and Polynices, and the flight of the defeated Argives. We are in front of the palace of Thebes. Antigone has brought Ismene to this spot in secret. They are whispering, lest anyone in the palace hears them.
Dear, dear Ismene, my poor darling sister, do you think Zeus has any more disasters to hurl upon our lives as punishment for our father's sins? So far we have felt the weight of sadness, of destruction, of disgrace, and even of dishonor. Now our king has stunned the whole city with this new law of his. Do you understand what it really means? Do you know what shame this new law will bring upon our brothers?
No, Antigone, what is it? I've heard nothing about them, neither good nor bad. Since that day when we were robbed of both our brothers, I've heard nothing. In that one day, in that one fatal battle, one brother killed the other. I've heard that the Argive enemy has run away last night, but other than that, I've heard nothing else, nothing that would make me neither happy nor sad.
I thought so. That's why I've brought you out here, Ismene, to tell you about it secretly and alone.
Antigone, what is it? I can feel something horrible, something frightening in your words.
The burial of our brothers, Ismene. Creon has decreed that the one may be buried with all honors, while the other is not to be buried at all, but instead he is to be shamed. They say Creon has buried Eteocles with all proper burial rites and ceremonies, fully preparing him for the world below, while our other brother, Polynices, who died a death just as horrible, should be left unburied and unmourned, left alone to be the food for the sky's starving ravens, all those birds of prey that eagerly hunt out their food. These are the laws our Lord Creon has decreed for us too, Ismene. For you, Ismene, and for me. Yes, even for me. They say he's about to come out of the palace any minute now to make this declaration again, loud and clear, in case there is anyone who hasn't heard it yet. And he is not taking this declaration lightly either, because if someone dares to disobey it, he'll have death by public stoning to look forward to. So, that's how things stand at the moment, my dear sister Ismene. And you, now you, must show the true worth of your birth. Are you worthy of it, Ismene, or will you shame your house, Ismene, the house of Oedipus, our father?
But, Antigone, if things have come this far, what can I do? How could I possibly help?
We can think and act together.
How? And do what, exactly? Antigone, what are you up to? What awful, what dangerous thing have you got in your mind now?
Ismene, help this hand to lift our brother's corpse.
Oh, no. Antigone, are you thinking of burying Polynices? It is against the will of our country and the will of our king, Antigone.
He's our brother, Ismene, yours and mine. And if you won't help me, then they won't be blaming me for having betrayed him.
Oh, you poor, poor woman, Antigone. Are you really going to bury our brother against the king's wishes?
Creon has no right at all to separate me from my own brother, none whatsoever.
Antigone, dear sister, think how hated our father was when he died, how full of shame he was. He had committed such shame and such sins that after bringing them all to light, after he confessed them all, he gouged out both his eyes. Then she too, Jocasta, who bore the double name of mother and wife, took her own life with a rope. Then both our poor brothers perished in the one day, each of them killing the other with his own hand. And so now, here we are, we too are left alone. Think what awful end we can expect if we go against Creon's law, Antigone. After all, my darling sister, don't forget we are mere women. We can't fight men. The rulers are far stronger than we are, and we have to do as they say, not only about this, but also about far worse things. So what shall I do on my behalf? What is the only thing left for me to do? Is to pray to the dead souls to forgive our Polynices, and then do exactly as Creon says. Trying to do deeds beyond your ability, my sister, is madness. Mindless folly, dear.
Fine, then. I will neither beg you, nor would I be happy to accept your help, even if you had offered it to me, my sister. You can believe what you want, but I shall go and bury him. My death will be sweet once I bury him, because I will be lying next to him in the underworld, having committed sacred, blessed crime. The time I'll have to please the dead, sister, is far longer than the time I have to please the living. I will be among the dead forever. But you, Ismene, you can choose whether or not you want to dishonor these things that are honored by the gods.
I'm not dishonoring them at all, Antigone, but I can't see how I can go against the city either.
Sure, sure. Make all the excuses you want, Ismene, but I'm off to bury my dear brother's body.
How afraid I am for you, Antigone.
Afraid? Oh no, don't be afraid for me, Ismene. Look out after your own life.
At least don't tell anyone else, Antigone, and nor will I. Let's keep this a secret.
God, by all means, Ismene, do tell the whole world. In fact, my sister, I'd hate you all the more if you didn't.
Cold things are wrapped around your hot heart, my dear sister.
Perhaps, but I know whom I should please.
And perhaps you may succeed, but you're asking to do the impossible.
At least I shall be trying for as long as my strength holds out.
But one needs to know from the beginning what things one is capable of doing and not pursue in vain the impossible.
This sort of talk will reward you with not only my own hatred, but also with that of your dead brother, when you, too, will die and you will want to be near him. And he'll be right to hate you then.
Antigone and Ismene exit. Enter chorus.
O ray of the sun, most beautiful light ever shone upon our Thebes, the Thebes of Seven Gates. Here you are at last, great eye of our golden day.
You have come over the great waters of Dirce and made the enemy tighten his grips on the reins of his horse and hasten his flight. He had come from Argos in full armor, white shields glaring.
Covered in white wings, with full armor and with crests like the manes of horses. On his head, he was guided by the shrill and forked words of Polynices to our land.
And like an eagle, swooped upon us from above.
The enemy first hovered and weighed his bloodthirsty spears for our seven-gated castle. But then he turned sharply and ran well before his face was soaked in our own blood.
Well before the resin of our pine trees gave Hephaestus his fiery garlands.
Such was the war noise which mighty Ares threw hard against the back of his difficult foe.
This because Zeus hates the arrogant tongue.
So, as soon as he saw them, rushing out like an overcharged river, with their insolent golden spears and swords.
And just as they were about to shout out their triumphant cry from the tips of our towers, he, Zeus, threw his searing bolt at them.
And so, our enemy, who came to us with torch in his hand, in the grips of a whirling whirlwind, wavered and swayed for a while, high above us, but then fell heavy upon the ground, and there he lay.
Things turned out differently for him then. Ares stood by our side, and the fates destroyed him.
Seven of our generals against seven of theirs.
Equal in number, equal in skill, all gave their lives, their full bronze armor, to Zeus.
All but two unlucky men, born of the same father and the same mother.
Double the contest, spear to spear, double the death. each a victim to the other.
But victory, so great is her name, has come to us, O Thebes.
So well armed is this city.
And so let us forget wars and begin the sacred dances in every temple of every god, beginning with Dionysus.
Let us dance all night.
The gates of the palace open, and Creon and soldiers enter.
Ah, here is Creon, son of Monoiseus, and our new king. The gods gave us this luck along with our new victory. I wonder what disturbs him so much that he sent a herald calling us, his elders, to an early morning meeting.
Men, the gods have righted again what they have thrown into turbulence before. I've gathered you here, you alone, because I know of the respect you had for Laius's throne and for his person. Even when Oedipus rebuilt the city and he himself died, you stayed loyal to his sons with minds unswayed. So now that these two both, with each other's polluted swords, died, a double fate for them both and both on the one day, I, being their nearest next of kin, took over the throne. Yet it's impossible to understand the soul, the mind, the wisdom of any man before he's tested by the great power and laws. And I feel this, that a man is of no use to his city if he's to govern it not by wisdom, but by a tongue silenced by some fear. And if a man places anything above his city in friendship, that man, I think, is worthy of disdain. This I always felt, and this I will always feel. Let Zeus, who sees all, be my witness. I will never hold my tongue if I see that our city is in harm's way, nor will I make friends with an enemy of Thebes. Because I know one thing absolutely, that our safety relies on us traveling upon a steady ship. Only then can we make friends. It is by these laws that I will hold our city strong. And so, in respect of Oedipus's sons, I have proclaimed to the city that Eteocles, who fought and fell for our country, who fought more bravely than anyone in this battle, let him be buried in a grave with all honors due to the most worthy dead. For his brother, though, Polynices, his own flesh and blood, the man who came back here to burn his country end to end and her gods, the man who wanted to taste his brother's blood and make slaves out of his own kin, it is prohibited for everyone in this land to honor him by building for him a grave or by shedding a tear of grief. Let his corpse be left untouched, unburied. Let the dogs and the birds of prey tear it to pieces, mangle it, make a ghastly sight for all. These are my thoughts. I shall never give to the dishonorable the same rights that I give to the honorable, but he who loves his city will earn the same honors, whether alive or dead.
You have the right, son of Menoceus, to do as you please, and decree what laws you want, both for the dead as well as for the living.
Then heed well the things I have said to you.
This task is so weighty, my lord. You should place it upon the shoulders of younger men.
Don't worry. The men who are watching over the body are already at their post.
Well then, what else is there for us to do?
Just make sure you don't stand by while this law is broken.
Who is mad enough to seek out his own death?
And that will be the wages of that error. Death. Yet there are men who the mere hope of winning has killed them.
Enter a guard. He is harried and afraid, obviously carrying an uncomfortable report.
My king, I can't really say that I've lost my breath by running my feet to the ground so as to get here as quickly as I could. No, I tarried. God knows I've stopped myself often enough on the way here, and I've almost turned back many times. My soul, you see, was talking to me all the while, and all the while it kept changing its mind. Poor man, it would say one minute, why are you rushing to your suffering? Or again, stupid man, it would say, Why are you hanging about like this? What if the king hears it from someone else? What a mess you'd get yourself into then. Stuff like that. I was spinning around in my head, and it made this small road so much longer. Eventually, and in spite of all the arguing in my soul, the decision to come here before you won over. And even if I have nothing really to tell you, still I wish to speak, because I've come holding on to the hope that I'll suffer nothing more than what's my due, my king.
So what is it that's made you lose your courage so badly?
Oh, hang on. You know, I want to say something about me first, because, you see, my king, I've neither done this awful deed, nor did I see who did it. So by rights, I should not suffer nothing because of it. I didn't do the deed, my lord.
I can hear lots of words, but I can also see plenty of walls around them. You obviously have some important news to tell us.
Walls, yes. That's because it's always painful to utter bad news.
Well, then say what you have to say and be off.
All right, then. Here it is. Someone, my king, someone, I don't know who, someone has buried the body of the dead Polynices a little while ago. He just tossed a bit of soil over them, that's all. Some dry dust, performed all the usual sacred things, and then quickly ran off.
What? What man has the audacity to do such a thing?
Impossible to tell, sir. The soil is not disturbed at all, neither dug up by pick nor shoved about by hoe. The ground is as solid as a rock, without the slightest mark of bruise, nor lines made by cartwheels. Not a footprint left by the person who did this, my king. And so, when the first guard of the day calls us all to have a look, we were stunned by this inexplicable sight. The corpse was fully buried. No, I don't mean entombed beneath the ground, but there was this somewhat high mount put above him, as if done by someone who wanted to save him from dishonor. Yet we could see no prints anywhere, not even the footprints of some wild beast or some dog which might have come to tear at the corpse. We saw nothing at all. Then we started arguing with harsh words, each guard blaming the other for it, and we nearly got down to blows because there was no one there to pull us apart, because every one of us was thought of as guilty, and there was no proof to save anyone. We all screamed that we were not at fault, and each of us was ready to walk into fire, holding hot irons and swearing by all the gods to prove that he neither did it nor knew who did it. Then, when all our arguing came to nothing, one of us came out and spoke words that made our head drop low in horror, because we could neither say no nor come out of this with a great deal of trouble, so we listened. He said that we should inform you of this immediately rather than cover it up. Then we've all agreed, and then we chose by lot. Fortunately, my king, the lot fell on poor old me, and so here I am, unwilling and unwanted. I know that because I know that no one ever welcomes a bearer of bad news.
Crayon, while this man was talking, a thought had crossed my mind. Perhaps it's some god's doing.
Quiet! By Zeus, you're making me angry. It seems that not only are you all old, but you're mindless as well. I cannot tolerate such nonsense. The gods do not care for this corpse. And why should they? To honor a man who's come here to put fire to their adorned temples and to the people's offerings? To turn their land and laws upside down? Or do you see the gods honoring evildoers these days? Of course not. No. For a while now, there have been some people around here who tolerate my decree only with mutterings and by shaking their treacherous heads. No, they did not want to bend their heads and place it into my yoke as justice demands. They did not want to obey me. And I know this very well. Whoever did this did it because he was paid money by those malcontents. Money. No discovery ever made by man is worse than the silver coin. It's this silver coin which turns countries upside down. It's this silver coin which sends the men away from their homes. It's this silver coin which turns the minds of wise men, makes them wander about, lost to evil deeds, teaches them to commit every sacrilege. It will not be long before these traitors who have done this will reap their reward. And all of you know that also, so long as Zeus receives my devotion, I swear that if you do not find the man who has committed this atrocious burial, and if you do not present him here before my own eyes, Hades will not suffice for you. Believe me, before the noose tightens your gullet, you will have revealed the doer of this sacrilege. You'll know then, for the next time, from where to steal, and you will also know that no one should not steal from everyone and everywhere. Dishonorable prophets destroy more people than they save.
My king, do I have permission to speak, or shall I just turn about and leave?
Can you not see that the very sound of your voice disturbs me?
Is it your ears that are disturbed, my king, or is it your soul?
What? Are you weighing the disturbances to locate its spot?
Well, you see, my lord, it is the culprit who disturbs your soul, my lord, whereas I merely disturb your ears.
What a chatterbox the gods have made out of you.
Chatterbox or not, at least I have not committed this crime, my king.
Oh, you did indeed. You've done it by selling your soul for silver.
Oh, my, what a terrible thing it is for one to think if the thought is the wrong one.
Go. Go and make your logic prettier. Go, but if you don't bring the culprits to me, you'll see what disasters dishonorable gains can bring.
Exit Creon into the palace.
Oh, let them be found. Above all else, it's my wish also. Still, fate will choose whether they're caught or not, and I shall forget I've ever been there, and you will never see me again. What a huge debt I owe to the gods. I neither hoped nor suspected this unwelcomed end.
Exit the guard.
Wonders abound in this world, yet no wonder is greater than man. None.
Through the wide, wild white of a frenzied sea, and through the screaming northerlies beneath him, and through all the furious storms around him, through all this, man can pass.
And God's most glorious earth, the imperishable, untiring earth, this man works with his horses and plows year in, year out.
And man traps generations of the light-minded birds in his nets.
And man catches the nations of wild beasts.
And herds of teeming fish, huge harvest of the sea, man catches in his nets made of mighty cord.
So skillful is man. Even the beasts that live in the barren mountains, he rules over with his cunning machines.
And all around the hairy neck of the horse, he places the yoke, and he does this around the tireless bull also.
And man has learnt speech and thought swifter than the wind he mastered.
And learnt to govern his cities well.
And this omniscient being has learned how to avoid the blasts of the wild open air, the arrows of the freezing night, the dreadful wind-driven, piercing gale.
He's prepared for all events barring death, and from death he can find no escape. Of illness, though, and of disease, each man found a cure for the other.
And though his wisdom is great in discovery, wisdom beyond all imaginings, yet one minute it turns to ill, the next again to good.
But whoever honors the laws of his land and his sworn oaths to the gods, he'll bring glory to his city.
The arrogant man, on the other hand, the man who strays from the righteous path, is lost to his city. Let that man never stay under the same roof as me or even be acquainted by me.
Enter the guard, dragging behind him Antigone. She has her hands tied with a rope.
Ha! Is this a ghost?
My mind argues.
Yet how can I say no when I know her?
Is this not Antigone, poor child?
Poor daughter of the poor man Oedipus.
What happened, Antigone? Surely you're not brought here because you've disobeyed the king's edict.
Surely they haven't caught you doing such a thing.
That's it! You've got it all right! We've caught her burying Polynices. Where's the king?
Enter Creon from the palace. With soldiers.
Here he is. Came out of the palace just in time.
In time for what? What is it?
My king, it's true. One shouldn't take oaths lightly because a second thought often makes a liar out of the first. That's how it was with me. After all the fury and anger you threw at me the last time I was here and you had me trembling as if I was in the middle of winter, I gave a sworn oath you'd never see me here again. Yet, Nothing is sweeter than the unexpected joy, the joy your mind cannot imagine. So in spite of those oaths I've taken, I've come with this woman who we caught burying the dead soldier. No lots to draw this time. The luck was wholly mine and no one else's. And now, my king, she's all yours. Take her, question her, judge her as you wish, and so far as I'm concerned, I think I'm right in saying I'm free and that I've escaped any punishment.
So how did you catch her? Doing what exactly?
You know what? She was burying the body of Polynices.
Is this true? Do you understand what you're saying?
Completely, sir. I'm telling you, I've seen her with my own eyes. She was burying the body, the one you've banned, sir, with my own eyes, sir. Am I not saying it clear and straight, sir?
And how exactly was she seen? Who caught her? Where did she do it?
Well, sir, it happened like this. After that tirade of yours, all full of fear and dread, we returned to the ground where Polynices' corpse lay. When we got there, we dusted the corpse totally clean. And then, by the end of our work, we had it stripped, absolutely naked. Of course, by then, sir, the corpse had begun to, let's say, putrefy. Then we sat upon some rocks. We sat windward side, sir, so as not to be hit by the stench of the corpse. Each of us kept swearing at the other with horrible consequences if he had not taken his job seriously. And things proceeded like this until the sun reached mid-sky and turned into a burning flame. Then, suddenly, some wild and spinning wind comes and raises a godly turbulence, sir. Takes over the whole camp, hitting mercilessly all the leaves and all the branches of the trees in the valley. The sky, sir, the sky swelled from the dust, and we with our eyes firmly shut, stood there, waiting for some god's curse to be hurled at us. Then after a while, the storm passed, and this woman here, sir, appeared. She began crying, sir, like a little bird that has come to its nest and found it bereft of its chicks. Exactly like that, sir. When she saw that the body was naked, she began to scream and curse with wild oaths at those who did it. Then immediately after that, sir, she brings handfuls of dry dust, and lifting a beautiful bronze urn up above the corpse, she pours libations from it, sir. But as soon as we saw her, we rushed towards her all of us together and grabbed her. She was calm about everything, sir, and it was easy to question her about what she had done then, as well as when she must have done it before. She kept nothing back, sir, nothing, which made me feel both sad and happy, sir, because it is a sweet thing for one to escape a disaster, but a sad one indeed to lead a friend into it. One way or the other, though, I place nothing before my own life's salvation, sir.
You with the head to the ground. Do you admit your guilt?
I admit my guilt. Yes, I did it.
You, guard, you can go now. Go anywhere you like. You are free from every suspicion. And you, Antigone, tell me with a few quick words, were you aware of the proclamation that forbade anyone from burying Polynices?
Of course I was. Everyone was.
And you had the audacity to break that law?
Yes, because this was not a law decreed by Zeus, nor by Zeus's daughter, Justice, who rules with the gods of the underworld. Nor do I believe that your decrees have the power to override those unwritten and immutable laws decreed by the gods. These are laws which were decreed neither yesterday nor today, but from a time when no man saw their birth. They are eternal. How could I be afraid to disobey laws decreed by any man when I know that I'd have to answer to the gods below if I had disobeyed the laws written by the gods after I died? I knew that my death was imminent. Of course I did. And even if it came sooner, I would still think it a good thing, because when one lives in such a dreadful misery, why should he not think death to be a good thing? There is no pain in this death, but the sight of the body of my mother's son, dead and unburied, would be a painful thing for me to endure. Nothing else hurts me, and if you think I'm a mindless woman, then perhaps it's a mindless man who recognizes a mindless woman.
My king, I see a savage head from a savage father. It has yet to learn how to bend with ill fortune.
Know this, though. The tougher the mind, the easier it falls. The tougher the iron is made in the burning fire, the easier it breaks or cracks. And it is a light pull of the reins which teaches the most spirited horses obedience, because it's not right for a slave to be arrogant. This woman knew the arrogance of her deed she performed, and was aware of her disobedience to our laws. Yet she still continued with the performance of that deed and laughed at her achievement. Were she to gain an upper hand in this, and keep it with impunity, she would be seen as being the leader of this land, and not I. What, is she a man? Even though she's my sister's child, and even though she's the closest blood relative to me here, of all of us who revere Zeus, she will not escape the ultimate penalty. She will not escape death. Even her sister will be put to death because I accuse her, too, of the same crime, because she, too, schemed the burial of Polynices' corpse. Call her here immediately. I saw her only a minute ago behaving like a raving lunatic.
Soldiers exit through the palace gates.
The soul of those who scheme of evil deeds in the cover of darkness and shadows are often disclosed, even before those deeds are accomplished. And there's nothing I hate more than when someone is caught committing a crime and then tries to hide it by embellishing it with sweet words.
Kill me then. Or are you waiting for something else?
Who, me? No, I need nothing else. I have everything I need.
So what are you waiting for? I find no pleasure in your words, either now, nor, dare I say, will I, in the future. And the feeling, I'm sure, is mutual. None of my actions please you. Where can I get higher pleasure than by burying my brother? All these men here would agree with me if only their tongue was not stopped by fear. Kings, though, among all the other benefits they get with the crown, they can also do and say as they please.
You're the only ones among them who sees this, the only ones of all the Thebans.
They too can see, but they hold their tongue when you're near.
Aren't you ashamed of yourself standing apart from all the others in this?
No, I feel no shame wanting to honor my own flesh and blood.
Was not Eteocles also your flesh and blood?
Yes, same father, same mother.
How then do you honor Polynices when there is a dishonor to your other brother?
Eteocles would not bring this up in the underworld.
But though one is a traitor, you honor them both in the same way.
I'm burying a brother, not a slave.
The one was fighting against his country while the other in its defense.
Hades, however, seeks similar laws for all.
But it is not right for good and evil to be rewarded by the same lot.
Who might know if such things are of any value down below?
No enemy will become a friend in the underworld.
I am for sharing love, not hatred.
Well then, if you must love, love those you'll meet down below. But so long as I am on earth, no woman will be the ruler.
Ah, here is Ismene coming through the gates. She is shedding sisterly tears.
Moist cheeks, bright red face, marred by a huge cloud over her brow.
You too, eh? Locked up in the palace like a snake that's secretly sucking someone's blood? I had no idea I was nurturing two curses, two women who wanted to topple my throne. Come here. Will you admit that you took part in this burial, or will you swear that you knew nothing about it?
Yes, I did it. If she admits to doing it, so do I. Yes, I too accept responsibility.
No, justice will not allow you to do this. You neither wanted to help me bury our brother, nor did I take you with me when I did it.
But Antigone, in such troubled times, I feel no shame in sharing the dangerous journey with you.
Hades and all the gods below have no idea who did this deed, and I can't tolerate a sister who loves only with words.
Let me die with you, Antigone. And let me pay my debt to our dead brother. Don't refuse me this honor.
My own death is enough. I have no need of your company down below, and you should not claim for yourself rewards for which you haven't lifted a finger.
But what sort of life will be left for me if I lose you, dear sister?
Ask Crayon. It's him you're worried about.
What do you gain by hurting me so much?
If I'm hurting you, I'm also hurting myself.
Yet even now, tell me, how can I help you?
Save yourself. I do not envy your escape of death.
So we can't share the same fate?
No, because you chose to live and I chose to die.
At least let me tell you my reasons for doing so.
Because you believed in their system of justice, and I believe in mine.
Yet the fault weighs us equally.
Courage. You live, but my soul has been dead for a long time now. It died so as to serve our dead.
These women, one of them just showed herself to have become mad, and the other to have been mad since birth.
Because, my king, even the mind leaves one when he's stricken by disaster.
Your mind has left you the minute you started mingling with evildoers.
How shall I live without her?
Her? Forget her now. She no longer exists.
Will you kill your son's bride-to-be?
There is much more fertile land in the world for my son, Hymen.
But the love between these two, can it be found elsewhere?
I'd hate my son to have an evil wife.
Poor Hymen, how your father disgraces your name.
You and all your talk about marriage is making me mad.
Are you sure you want to deprive your son of her?
It's Hades who'll put an end to this wedding.
So you stay firm about her death?
And also I'll have your support. Right, let's put an end to all this. Men, take them inside, and from now on they should be tied up, because no matter how courageous a man is, the moment death approaches, he wants to flee.
How lucky are the people who have not tasted an evil deed in their whole life?
Those people whose house is stricken by some godly wrath, those people will be visited by every possible calamity for endless generations.
Just as when a huge wave, bloated with the wild winds of the far north, Thrace, rushes over the dark abyss and, from its dire deep, agitates violently the black, wind-shaken sands. Below, then, in the countersigning of the counter-groaning, rolls against the waves, the wave-beaten headlands.
I could see the suffering of the house of Labdacus for a long time now.
Suffering falls upon the suffering of those who have perished, and not one generation is able to save the other. There's no escape. Some or the other will strike these generations down forever.
And so here again we see a light risen above the last root of Oedipus's house, yet the blood-painted sickle of the gods of the underworld came, mingled with the wild words and the words of frenzy.
The Furies! The spirits of vengeance!
What human arrogance can stand against your strength, Zeus?
Neither sleep, who wakens all, or the tireless months of the gods who can bind you.
The years have not lessened you, and still you reign in the brilliant light of Olympus, and this law will hold fast for the past, the present, and the future.
Man enjoys nothing without having to endure some ill fortune. Because hope, and for some men of a good thing for others, the hollow men, hope laughs at their desires.
Betrayal slips within a man without his knowing anything right up to the moment when his leg is burning in the open fire.
That when a known expression is wise, the one wind says that if God wishes to guide a man to ruin, that the man will see good in evil and will not be long before ruin strikes him.
Enter Hymen through the palace gates.
Ah, but here's Hymen, the last of your sons, your youngest born, my king.
Has he come because he has heard of his bad luck of losing his wife-to-be, Antigone, and the loss of his marriage to her?
He looks heavy of heart, sad and bitter.
I'll soon know this more clearly than if a seer had explained it to us. Tell me, son, have you come here angry at me because of my irreversible edict about your future bride? Or to tell me that no matter what I do, we'll still be friends.
Father,
I am your son, and you are my guide, guiding me with your good counsel. Counsel which I always follow, because I shall never put the interests of my wedding ahead of my father's interests, since your counsel is always correct.
And that's how it should always be, my son. Everything should give way to a father's wish, because that's what a father hopes to have many children, so that they can inflict upon his enemies whatever hard punishment they can, and treat his friends with the same honor as he does. Whereas the father who brings to the world worthless children, well, how would that be different to having brought about the birth of innumerable pains and cause for his enemy to ridicule him? So now don't let the desire for a woman make you forget these sentiments, my son. It is wise to know that the embrace of a bad woman in your house is icy. Can there be a bigger wound than that inflicted by an evil friend? Spit her out, son. Get rid of this woman like one does an enemy, and send her to Hades, where she can marry anyone she wants. She's the only one in the city who decided to openly disobey my command. I'll not look like a liar before every citizen. I'll kill her. Then she can go and sing all her prayers to Zeus, the protector of our folk down below. If I nurture rebels within my household, there'll be more rebels outside it. The man who's good at managing the affairs of his own household will be worthy also of being the ruler of his nation, whereas he who violates the laws of the gods in his city or wants to command its leaders will never gain my respect. We must obey those whom the city has ordained to be its leaders. We should obey them unquestioningly in all things minor or great, those we agree with and those we oppose. I believe such a man would govern well, and he'd also be an obedient servant, and he'd stay at his post even in the hurricane of war, honorably, bravely defending his country. There's no worse evil than anarchy. Anarchy destroys nations, my son. Anarchy destroys homes. Anarchy turns the spears of allies into fleeing cowards. Those men left standing, the survivors, have been saved by discipline. That's why each man must protect with all his might law and order. And under no circumstance must he allow a woman to defeat him. It would be best, if needs be, to be defeated by a man, rather than allow it to be said that a woman had taken over.
My lord, unless our many years have sapped our brains, we think what you have just said is true.
Gods give man his most important possession, his brain. And I would not, or could not say, if what you just said is correct. But others, too, can be correct, Father. I can hear and see what others are saying or doing all about you, or what they are blaming you for. Things which they would not say directly to your face because they are afraid, because these things which you do not want to hear are what they are saying. I, on the other hand, can hear secretly how the citizens grieve about this woman, and they whisper things like, she of all other women deserves this punishment the least, because her crime was a brilliant act of virtue worthy instead of praise. She did not allow to have the corpse of her brother left unburied to be torn apart by the bloodthirsty dogs or the wild carrion. Should she not, therefore, instead be awarded some golden prize? These are the covered words that slowly work their way through the city. Yet I, Father, value no other concern more than I value your happiness. What jewel is greater for the child than his own father's glory, and for the father that of his own children? So don't be so single-minded. You said it yourself quite rightly. He who thinks he's the only one with a brain or a tongue or a soul, if you open him up, you'll find that he's a hollow man. On the contrary, it's no shame for even a wise man to continue learning, nor should a man be obstinate. One can see the trees on the heavier river banks, those that bend with the rushing current, survive, whereas those bent against it are torn, roots and all. Same with the boats, Father. When the captain tightens all ropes and sails against the wind, the boat will topple and the captain will have to swim all the way back home. So you too, father, bend a little to the fury and try to change your mind. I'm younger, I know, but I still might be able to judge what's right. And I say that it's a good thing for a man to be born with all possible wisdom, but still, because it's not such a common thing, to be able to learn from others.
It won't do you any harm, my lord, to listen to him and see if what he has to say is wise. And you too, Hyman, because both of you spoke well.
At our age, should we allow a young little rooster to teach us wisdom?
Justice, justice only. Young or old, one does not look at years, but deeds.
Do you consider the deeds of lawbreakers good?
No, I would not ask anyone to consider that the evildoers are good.
And has she not been caught committing such a crime?
No. All the people of Thebes shout it out with one voice.
Is a city, then, to dictate what my order should be?
See how like a young man you just spoke.
Should I govern the city for others and not for me?
There is no city that belongs to one man.
So a city does not belong to the man who governs it?
One man alone can only govern an empty city.
I see that this young man is taking the side of the woman.
That is true, if you are the woman, because I only care about your welfare.
Most evil boy, are you fighting your father?
Because I can see you practicing evil deeds.
Do I practice evil when I am defending my rights?
You are not defending them when you trample all over the laws of the gods.
Arrogant boy, servant to women.
Yet you never see me being the servant of evil deeds.
All this talk is for her sake.
For her sake, and for yours, father. For mine, and for the sake of all gods of the underworld.
Tear it out of your mind. You will never marry this woman alive.
So she will die, but her death will take someone else with her.
You're still arrogant enough to throw threats at us.
Is it a threat for one to speak against a stupid opinion?
You'll pay dearly for this, to want to teach us when you are without a brain yourself.
You want to speak, but not to listen.
Listen to you, the servant of a woman? Be quiet. Bother me no more with idle chatter, boy.
Had you not been my father, I would be telling you you've lost your senses.
Is that so? Is that what you'd be telling me? Well, by the gods of Olympus, I won't let you enjoy this sort of impertinence for long. Guards, take this hateful woman to be killed in front of her lover. Let his eyes witness her death.
My eyes? Don't ever think, father, that that will ever happen. Neither she will die before my eyes, nor will your eyes ever see me again. Let your friends enjoy your madness.
Exit Hyman through the palace.
The young man is gone, my king. Full of fury and indignation, in a mind such as his, will be carrying a burden of dangerously heavy thoughts.
Let him go, and let him do as his mind pleases. These women, however, will not be saved by their death, from their death by anyone.
Is that true? Will you kill both of them?
You're right. The one who had no hand in it should go free.
And the other? How will you kill Antigone?
I shall take her on a deserted road, untrampled by human foot, and there, with enough food to ward off the sin of murder for the city, lock her in a rocky, subterranean cave. Perhaps in there she can pray to Hades, whom she respects more than all the other gods, and he can save her from death. Either that, or perhaps she might be able to learn down there that it's no use earning the respect of the dead.
Exit Creon through the palace gates. Greece saves 240 at boat with migrants capsizes. Athens. Mounting one of its biggest rescue operations in the Aegean Sea this year, the Greek Coast Guard on Wednesday saved some 240 migrants after a large wooden smuggling boat capsized in high winds off the Greek islands of Lesbos, killing three people, including two children. The search continued late into the night in a bid to find more survivors. It's a big wreck. We don't often see this, a Coast Guard official on Lesbos said by telephone, noting that most boats dispatched by smugglers from Turkey to Greece carry 40 to 80 people. We've seen boats with 160 or 170, but that's rare, he added. Inflatable dinghies have been the smugglers' preferred vessel up to now. The official refused to speculate on whether the type of vessel used this time and the number of passengers aboard marked a new tactic by the smugglers. The wooden vessel flipped over in near gale force winds about 4 p.m, the official said. A Coast Guard boat sent out on alert. It was joined by a helicopter, another Greek vessel, and a boat belonging to Frontex, the European Union's border monitoring agency. It was bad weather. Thankfully, we had boats nearby and the response was quick, said the official who spoke on customary condition of anonymity. The three people confirmed dead were a man and two boys, a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. No details were available about their country of origin. In total, 8 migrants died on Wednesday in attempts to cross the Aegean from Turkey, according to the Greek shipping ministry, which cited 4 separate wrecks, 2 off Lesbos and 2 off Samos, another Greek island. Of the 8 dead, 6 were children.